We've got a great program for you in store now for the next couple hours. Lisa Gar, our very own, with us, her book, Becoming Aware. We'll get right into it with Lisa when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. She really doesn't need an introduction, but I'm gonna do it anyway. Lisa Gar, she hosts a very popular syndicated radio program. Now you're going to say, oh, that's Coast to Coast AM. Well, of course she does that with us, too. But hers is called The Aware Show, along with a weekly show on the Hay House Radio called Being Aware. In addition, she's got her own television program on the Guyan Television Network, too, with Guyan. And she's got her own popular online personal development series. Lisa reaches a combined audience of more than 4 million people a month all around the planet. And here she is on Coast to Coast. This is going to be fun. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm looking forward to this. You know, I was on your show some time ago, and this is fun. So how are you enjoying doing Coast to Coast, by the way?
I am loving it. To hear you say one of our own just makes my heart sing. It does. I'm so grateful to be a part of your organization. It's so much fun, and the listeners are so amazing. They're intelligent and fun and interested, and I love the listeners. They're a lot of fun.
I was talking to Tim Conway on KFI before I went on the air on Coast to Coast, and I do a Los Angeles area promo cut-in, and I mentioned you, and one of his colleagues jumped in and said, is that the actress? I said, no, she is what? Is she your aunt?
Yes, Terry is my aunt, yes. She is, I think, had just the best career because she had a really good knack for picking scripts. She just had this knack for picking the right ones, Young Frankenstein, and she was in Oh God, and she was in Tootsie. She just had a really good knack for scripts, and also a really talented comedian, and studied with, you know, the best, but just had an incredible career, and then MS took over her body, and
yeah.
It was really, 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 really has been challenging to watch.
I believe that. And you have had your own tragedy in your own life that you had to pick yourself up from. Tell us about that.
Yes. I had a very severe brain injury where I was on a mountain bike. I race mountain bikes. I used to, at least. And I fell down a very long hill. It was right before the end of a race. And I was at the top of the mountain, and the finish line was at the descent. It was a switchback descent down this mountain. And I looked right over the edge of the mountain, and I thought, oh, this is great. It was 108 degrees. It was a very steep race, about 5,000 feet of climbing. It was about 26 miles. And when I looked at the top of the ledge of this mountain I was on, I thought, oh, great. All I need to do is just hit those switchbacks. I'm done, and I can take a break. And
yeah.
I guess I just left at that moment. I think that was definitely the last thought I had, because the next thing I knew, I was crawling up a hill. I was on my bike, and then I was covered in pine needles, and I had no idea, no thought process was happening at that moment. I was just scrambling to try to get back on my bike, because that was what my body was trying to do. And I'd cracked my helmet in about 13 places. It was shredded. My jersey was shredded. I had pine needles inside my clothes. And I just started to drift. I just started to drift. I felt this very calm, peaceful state come over me. And then I started to go towards it, because it was so much more alluring than where my body was. The body was in pain, but I was going somewhere else, and it was so fascinating to me because it was huge. It was the most expansive, vast, instantaneous space dimension I had ever experienced.
Now, you weren't dying, right? This was not an OBE.
I think, no. I had my, you know, post accident found out that I had dehydrated my body to the point that they had to put 8 saline solution bags in my body after in the hospital. I had lost 12 pounds in 4 hours.
From the bike race?
Yes.
Jeez. Is that normal?
Mm-mm. Not at all. There was a couple people who actually had passed out that day because the
Well, it was hot. You said it was 108.
It was 108. It was so dry, but it was very extreme terrain. I mean, it was constant climbing, and it was just too much for my body. And I guess all the training that I got up, it was a seven-race series. So it was the prior days as well, and the whole year of that season, I was ranked second in the state of California. So I was having a really good season, but it was more than my body could handle. And I'm an athlete. I'm an extreme athlete. So I pushed myself to the extreme, which most athletes do, but I didn't know the severity that my body was in. And the most interesting thing for me was when I started to go into the space, I was able to observe the entire scene down below me. I saw my body, I saw the medics come up to my body, and then I started to experience their thoughts and their feelings. And it wasn't only their thoughts, it was their deep, deep desires. It was their yearnings, whether they were off purpose or where they were in love, or just the deep, raw emotions. I specifically remember feeling that and finding that so interesting, but it didn't bother me. It was just part of it. It was like I was everything. I was the sky. I was the people down below. I was Asia. It was the most comprehensive feeling. Talk about coherence. I mean, this was complete coherence with the entire field.
Was this for a moment, Lisa, or was this ongoing?
This must have lasted a while, because I got back into my body when the medics had put my body on a stretcher, and I jumped back in, and when my consciousness came back in when I was in my body, and they were tipping my body to the side because I was throwing up.
Oh, geez.
And they said, tip her to the side so she doesn't choke on her own vomit. And they were tipping my body to the side, and I remember this medic saying, it's a good thing that she's throwing up because she's not dying. And I was trying to comprehend it, and I was throwing up, and it was pain, and I didn't want to be there. And then I just passed back out again and kept going back towards this other dimension. And I don't know to this day, George, if it was just because my conscious mind was knocked so far offline that I was just deeply, deeply into the unconscious, or if it was truly another dimension. I choose to believe the dimension, because I was able to go there and come back and go and come back. And for me, I live to this day knowing that you can tap into these different realities and tap into these different dimensions, because I did.
That's pretty remarkable, just to be able to come in and out of it like that. Do you remember the accident now, even though you blanked out later, earlier?
I no, the memory loss is retroactive, unfortunately. So I remember pedaling, and I do not remember falling. I don't remember. The first thing I must have done
you
was
must have
hit
been,
my head.
You must have been flying downhill.
Yes. That was a really good descender.
So in order to fall like that, would you have hit something, maybe a pothole on the mountainside or something?
There's a lot of boulders in that area. There's a lot of rocks on the side of the hill, pine trees and rocks, and then it goes all the way down into this ravine, and there's a lake. This is Lake Castaic, which is up a little bit north of where your station is. And to crack my helmet in that many places, I must have hit rocks. But I think what happened is, because I was upright on the bike, and when you tip and you don't break your fall, the first thing you're going to hit is either your shoulder or your head.
That's right.
And I didn't break my shoulder, which is very common for mountain bikers.
You broke your head.
Yes. And thank God I had a helmet on, because I wouldn't be talking to you. But I damaged the prefrontal cortex, which was responsible for the language center. That's the language center of the brain, and also the cerebral cortex, which is where all the memory is housed. So,
and now you're broadcasting a couple syndicated shows, and you were at a point where you couldn't even talk?
Exactly. I woke up in the hospital, and the doctor, you know, stood above me, and he said, you know, what's your name, what's your birthday, you know, the regular questions they ask you to check. check when you, you know, you come back from a lack of consciousness, and they, and I knew the answers. I know my name, I know my birth date, and I was ready to tell them, and the brain was not sending the signal to the tongue. It was stopped. It was stuck.
Frustrating.
It was so, I panicked. I completely, because I know this. Why can't I say it? And I opened my mouth and nothing came out. And the doctor handed me a pad of paper and a pen, like he's seen this before. And I'm like, I don't want your paper and pen. I want to tell you because I know my name. And it wasn't coming out. And luckily, the guy that I had gone to the race with was, you know, got himself to the hospital. I was airlifted out via helicopter. So they airlifted me out of the scene, brought me to the hospital, and that was where I woke up. So it was just a bombardment of information when I woke up there of where am I, how did I get here, what happened, why can't I talk, and I just kind of imploded. It was panic. It was a panic-stricken moment, and it took me a very, very long time to get my language back. But I did it through the brain technology that I learned. I did it through neurofeedback, and I happened to have found a very brilliant doctor who was creating a new protocol at the time. His name is Dr. Barry Sturm, and he lectures all over the world now because of this protocol he created. But I started to, well, from doing the neurofeedback, it's electrodes they put on your head, and then you play these games with the computer monitor, and it's incredible because your brain,
you're trying to get your brain to function again? Is that what you're doing?
You do an assessment first, and he found the parts of the brain that were dormant or damaged or didn't send a signal back. Most of the hemispheres or the cortexes send a specific signal back that is the strength of the regular hertz of that particular cortex of the brain. And he found that my right prefrontal cortex, the amperage that it was sending back was less than below normal. It was dormant. It was asleep. It had been damaged. And that was the part that we started working on first, and because that's where the language center is. And so the brain is, it's amazing. You know, everything has a frequency, right? And so does our brain, and so does our body. So the frequency that would go through these wires to the program on the computer would then get matched and then increased just in a minute way, and then sent back to the brain, and the brain either ignores it or matches it. And if it matches it, that's a good sign, because then that sends the signal back to the computer. The computer sends the brain back a signal higher.
Lisa, how long was your recovery from this point of the accident to where you were really able to function again?
A year and a half.
Oh, my God.
A year and a half.
In between, no work, nothing?
I couldn't hold a memory. I couldn't remember what I told people. And I started a business when I was 21 and almost completely lost that business because I couldn't remember what I was telling clients or employees.
Oh,
or
my God.
Anything.
When did this happen?
This happened in 99 and 2000.
Jeez.
And it was one of the reasons why I started doing the radio show, because after I had healed my brain, as my healing process was going through, I was interviewing incredible people like this scientist and this amazingly brilliant acupuncturist I was working with that was like a fifth generation Chinese healer, and I mean just really, really a psychic medium I have been working with, because then I started taking classes into intuition, because my intuition was blown wide open. I could see things that I could never see before. I could look at somebody and I could see pictures in their field, and just sepiographs or framed pictures of people.
What do you think happened to make that so magnified?
I think it was the experience of knowing that it exists. Once you know, you don't go back. Once you see that, you can't go back. You can't go back to living in the small container that is your body.
No, I guess not.
It doesn't make sense anymore when you know that there's so much more available to us that is, that you can tap into with a thought pattern, with a visualization, that you can tap into it. there's no reason to live without that knowledge any longer. And then you start to play with it. So I started taking these classes on developing that ability, that kind of psychic ability. So I started to, just like anything, it's a muscle. You train it. The more you see, the more that the other person validates, then you say, okay, well, that's what that means. And then when you see this and you ask the person and you, oh, that's what that means. And it starts to get a certain sense of consistency. You start to see patterns. And while I was doing that, that's when I started the radio show, because I thought, God, people need to know about this information. And so I landed on KPFK here in Los Angeles, and I just started bringing on angel communicators. And this is like KPFK is a political left-wing liberal radio station. And I miraculously gone on in the middle of the day at 1 o'clock, 4 days a week, unheard of, with a spiritual radio show. And it was wildly received, because people didn't talk about that on the radio 15 years ago, on the day, you know, in the middle of the day at a political radio station. And it was one of those things where people were like, okay, I get this. And this has happened to me before. And I see angels. And yeah, I understand about psychic communication. And it really started to draw in an audience, because people, as you know, are interested in this information.
Oh, it's huge.
Absolutely.
So this, I'm fascinated with your healing process of what it took. I mean, at any point, Lisa, did anybody tell you, you're not going to be the same? You've damaged your brain. It's not going to happen.
It still isn't the same, because there's major chunks of information that are gone from my childhood, from my adolescence. I mean, a lot of it is, it's like Swiss cheese. There's giant holes where my mother will explain something to me, and I'll have zero recollection of what she's talking about. I will scan, and there's nothing there. I mean, houses we lived in. We lived in Kentucky for 2 years. I couldn't even tell you what it looked like. And that's sad. So there are parts that...
They're gone.
They're just gone. And I've learned to live with that. And it is what it is. And for a long time, and still to this day, I have a little bit of a trust issue with that, with myself, thinking, oh, God, did I forget that? Or people will reach out to me from high school, and I will have no recollection of who they are, and that's sad. But it is what it is, and I just start to trust it and say, okay, look, let's have a conversation now.
Well, look, you could have died that day.
Yeah, yeah.
And here you are. You had a reoccurring dream while you were recovering.
Mm-hmm.
We've only got about a minute before the break, but quickly tell us what the dream was, and then why did you keep having it?
The dream was interesting, and we might go into it a little more after the break, because it was it had a lot of significance. It was a train that I kept dreaming about, and the significance of the train is that it was in motion. It was in slow, very, very slow motion, and it was coming from somewhere. And I would jump on this train. It was going slow enough to step in it, and inside the train was much like what you're looking at there in the studio, the audio boards and the monitors, and it looked a lot like that studio. But I would go in there, and I saw these people sitting in chairs, these high back swivel chairs, and these were scientists and visionary leaders, and they were swiveling around in these chairs, and they were having a blast. It was total joy, and it was interesting, because there was this media, and then there was joy, media, joy, and that's what I kept getting. The essence of that was that kind of juxtaposition, because I'd worked in entertainment for a long time, and you know, it tends to be more competitive, more cutthroat. It wasn't joy, and that was one of the very significant parts of the dream.
Hold on for a sec, Lise. We're going to come right back with you on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you love to watch some television that you're streaming on the internet, you can pick up Beyond Belief. Simply go to this website, incredible promotion going on right now, which is beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back with Lisa Garr, her book, Becoming Aware. And, of course, Lisa hosts some of our Coast to Coast shows and has her own show called The Aware Show as well. Let's get back to this recurring dream that you had, Lisa, and how important it was for your recovery?
It was important because I had, as I said, that dream, that train, it was coming from somewhere and going somewhere. And so I would step on this train, see this control board, see these visionary leaders swinging around in these chairs having a good time. And specifically, the part about the dream that was so amazing to me, looking back on it, is I would step outside the train, and the word on the side of the train said, aware. And I kept seeing this thing, and it said a division of NHN on the bottom. I still don't know what that is, but it was very clear, though. And I kept having this dream and having this dream, and I finally, one morning, I woke up. You know when you have those, when you wake up and you're like, ah! you shock yourself, and I said to myself, you're supposed to do this. And I don't know where that came from or why I said that, but it was just right off of that dream I kept having again and again, this dream, this train, aware, you're supposed to do this. And when I started to put the pieces together, now I told you I was going through the classes mm-hmm. of visualization and so forth, so I started to put the pieces together, and that's when the door started to open for getting on to the radio platforms. I was I found out about a radio station that was going out of business before I got into KPFK, and it was KYPA. It was on AM dial here in LA. It was Personal Achievement Radio, and it was being merged with a Korean radio station. And so the drive time hosts were jumping off and finding new positions. And so I said, well, I'll take one of those slots. And that's where I started interviewing these people that were contributing to my healing and that were doing much more than that. I mean, healing, you know, cancer with apricot seeds from the Hunzits and some really incredible people. And that's how I developed this demo tape and then got on to KPFK. But the point of the dream was that it was coming from somewhere, and I've always felt that I am a participant in this movement of awareness. It's existed way before me. It's going to exist way after me. It's what you do, George. You bring awareness to so many topics that you illuminate and shine the flashlight on so that people can live in that state of awareness. It's part of such a bigger picture, and I've always found that dream, not only was it a catalyst for me to get to this place, maybe it was a vision that I needed to see that was given to me to get to the place of, you know, broadcasting about awareness, but it is a movement, I believe, and it's part of, you know, it's part of solutions, mm-hmm. it's part of forward movement in life, it's part of protection, it's part of everything.
At what point, Lisa, did you know that you were coming back in terms of the healing?
That's why that was one of the other things, is that the radio show allowed me to research and then spit out information. So I would dive in and then have to talk about.
Did you have lapses when you were on the air?
Oh yeah.
You
did?
In
the beginning it was scary. I remember those days when I would start off with a question that I wanted to ask and then it would disappear. And so I had I had scripts that I started off with. When I would do radio shows, I had scripts that I would go, I would come back from every break and saying, okay, in the last segment we covered this. I remember that.
Well, that happens to all of us, Lisa.
The radio show for me was a training ground. It was a way for me to use my brain in a high-performance way and force myself every day to remember what I was talking about, to focus, to be able to speak slowly and really pretty much to focus. So the radio shows for me are brain entrainment on an everyday basis.
How many people are walking around? We'll take calls with you next hour, so maybe we'll get a good sampling. But how many people are walking around today that they have some kind of brain deficiency. Mm-hmm. Something's happened to them.
Or head trauma.
Or head trauma, mm-hmm. Exactly. Do you think that's a big number?
Huge. It's a huge number. And there are also so many people that are walking around that have had NDEs that don't know what they are. Because when you have that experience, there is no frame of reference for what you went through. I didn't really understand fully that I had a classic near-death experience until I interviewed Raymond Moody. And
great guy.
Yeah, and I started researching on his Life After Life website, and there's a classic, you know, 10-step process of what happens when I'm... And I thought, how could this possibly be on this website? How would he possibly know what I went through? And then, you know, come to find out he's, you know, interviewed the most amount of people with NDEs and put together this classic definition to give people a framework for what they went through, that it's vivid, extremely vivid, that it you can remember it more clearly as if it just happened yesterday, that the feelings and the emotions that come from the experience that you have never leave, and they're crystal clear, and you know, there's some that go into a tunnel, but most feel this vast, expansive, where there are no words to possibly define the vastness of what you experience when you really, truly just leave this plane and go into this other existence. And again, it could have just been really my conscious mind getting knocked so far into a state of dormancy that I was able to be into that pure, expansive, unconscious state. But those classic definitions, people don't know what to do with. And you really don't know because you're trying to survive, you're in a recovery, you're trying to heal, you're dealing with deficiencies, you're scared. You don't know why you don't operate the same. Last thing on your mind is the tunnel and where you went. It's really not in, you know, it's not a part of your healing until, and I think that's why, you know, people like Raymond Moody and people that talk about and research NDEs are contributing to so many people discovering that this is what happened to them. And if you look back on those moments, every single one of them will be a pinnacle moment that change the trajectory of your life in some way. Of the people that I've spoken to and the authors that I've interviewed about that, is that those are huge moments. They're life-changing.
When you're behind someone in a car and the light turns green and they're just sitting there, not moving, you honk a little bit, you know, a lot of people say, what's wrong with that person? Are they brain dead? What's happening? What's going on with that person at that moment? Well, why aren't they alert and they just go?
Well, there's a lot of things that could be going on, sleep deprivation and lack of focus and so forth. But
not necessarily any brain injuries or trauma or anything like that, right?
Oh, are you talking about drifting into
different
dimensions? I mean, I believe that we can do that. There are, and I've become more and more attentive to where I see time lapses happen, where you'll look at the clock and it's one time and you'll look back at the clock and it's 20 minutes later or and you don't even realize that time has gone by. Why wouldn't we have been able to go into a different dimension during that time? I honestly don't think, as intelligent as this universe is, it would stop at four dimensions. Really.
Well, I agree.
I mean, really.
Much more.
Well, let's create this massive universe and all of the galaxy, and let's just stop at these four dimensions here. That would not happen.
Do you go through a daily brain exercise now?
I do. I have a very active visualization process that I do now, and I do on a daily basis. And I've learned a lot about the brain. It's one of my favorite topics. I've interviewed hundreds of neuroscientists, and the research that's coming out on the brain these days is fascinating. There's so much information that's coming out about the different cortexes and what they represent, and mostly these neural bundles that you can create and what a memory is. I started really getting curious about what a memory is.
I'm amazed that you're not getting seizures because of your injury.
I am so grateful that I'm not getting seizures.
Because most people who have that kind of trauma they do have seizures.
I honestly believe it's because of the neurofeedback, George. Neurofeedback is one of those things that has so many, it's so helpful in so many different ways. It can help with everything from when I was in the waiting room, the kids that were in the waiting room with me were having seizures. They were epileptic. They were autistic. And these kids were getting better. And I would sit in the waiting room with the parents, and I would just let them go ahead of me because they were getting their kids back. And it was, I mean, I had nowhere to be, so I was just watching this happen. I think that, I mean, and I've talked to many different scientists who distribute and have neurofeedback centers, and I said, why isn't this more widely recognized by the AMA or different medical establishments? And it was told to me that it literally threatens every industry out there, that neurofeedback and EEG will threaten the pharmaceutical industry, the medical industry, and any industry that has to do with making money from illness. Because everything happens from the brain. The chemistry in the brain sends signal to the entire body about wellness and sickness, and the chemistry, it's signaled from the brain. So that's where, if you go to the brain for the healing, and if you actually start to change the chemistry in the brain, that's what neurofeedback does. It starts to change and entrain the brain to either relax, which releases a certain amount of neurochemicals and neurotransmitters, or it can actually cause the brain to focus, which is a whole other set of neurotransmitters. It can cause the hormones to balance, which causes a whole other cascade of hormonal releases in the brain. You can use it you can use it to sleep better. You can use it to focus, peak performance, relaxation, anxiety, depression, hormone balancing. I've gone back to use it for several other things. It's extremely effective for PTSD. A lot of studies on neurofeedback and PTSD because it's non-invasive, no side effects. And it's one of the regular things that I do. I continue a regular course of neurofeedback about every 6 months now.
Do you need it or do you just do it because you want to?
Oh, I need it. I definitely do.
You do.
And the brain doesn't, I mean, it's like a muscle. If you don't use it, then you start to lose it.
Now, have you had some MRIs or brain scans? And, I mean, how's your brain now?
Fully functional. The right hemisphere that was very dormant is now operating at a full frequency with the left hemisphere. So the vibrations on both sides are balanced, which is amazing. And so, yes, I have gone back, and well, that's part of the protocol, is that you get a full assessment ahead of time before you start the protocol and then afterwards. And I was also part of a research experiment, so it was very well documented, and that was a good thing because I got to learn about my brain in the process deeper than probably just a regular patient, and I was really grateful for that. And then, of course, that information contributed to this protocol that Dr. Sermon went and lectured about around the world. I have not been in contact with him. Actually, I contacted him a couple years ago to help my aunt, but she had been in such an advanced state of MS that it was too difficult to really make a difference at that time. But it does take a commitment, too. You have to go twice a week for 20 to 24 sessions to really... You know, but healing takes attention. It takes commitment. It's not a magic bullet. It takes time. And I believe, because then you are a part of your healing process. You're part of your success. And then you get to experience it along the way.
No more mountain bikes for you?
Are you kidding me? I can't stay off them.
You're still on them?
Absolutely. Oh, my God, George. Mountain biking is my choice. Absolutely.
I mean, are you still doing the kind of biking you did prior to the accident?
I'm still an avid mountain biker. I still ride. I still descend like a crazy person.
Oh,
but
Lisa.
I wear a helmet. I usually ride with someone else. But I'm not racing.
Don't you miss a coast-to-coast show because of this.
Oh, no.
The boss has spoken.
I am safe. I am absolutely safe. I know my limits, and I mostly ride just for my convergence with nature. I mean, I love the mountain. I love what it does. It's back to that expansion. It's back to that feeling of total expansiveness. I have such a good time on the mountain. Yes, I still ride three to 4 days a week.
That's amazing.
Absolutely.
With your schedule.
Well, it also is another way to entrain my brain every day. When I wake up, within an hour or so, I will either be on my bike or in a spin class or some type of exercise, because I can literally feel my brain changing about 20 minutes into an exercise routine. I can feel my thoughts change. I can feel my day start to get organized. I can feel more focused. I can go from a completely negative state of mind to a complete change in my brain in 20 minutes. And I've gotten to the place where I'm so sensitive to it. You know, when you exercise, all those great dopamine, serotonin, all those happy chemicals start to release. If you're out with other people, oxytocin releases. I mean, it's one of the best things that I can do for my brain. It wakes me up. That's my commitment to myself every day. If I don't, it's not a happy day. It's not a good day. But for the most part, I do some form of exercise every single day so that it's part of the brain entrainment that I do. I believe that it works, so therefore it does.
Let's take a moment to talk about consciousness and how important has that been in your development?
Oh, it's everything to me. That's another thing that I do on the radio, is that I create these conscious conversations all day long, just like you do. I find that so stimulating, a way to create a connection with somebody else that inspires somebody else. You don't have to do that on the radio. You can do that with a person standing in line. You can do that. You know how many people go up to people and say, just can I have my whatever? Why not connect for 30 seconds with someone behind the counter with a, hey, how are you? With something that goes beyond the threshold of this all about me world. The consciousness for me is what I live for. I love connectedness. I love conscious conversations. I love conversations that change the trajectory of people's lives because of someone who wrote an amazing... You know, when somebody is ready for the healing or ready for the information, they will find it. They will seek it out. You hear that all the time. When the student is ready, the teacher appears. And that's what conscious conversations are for me. I'm a big fan of Wayne Dyer, and he hosted my radio show for a little while when I was giving birth. He was my he sat in for me on KPFK, and he's one of those people who has that same commitment. He brings in that level of consciousness and expanded awareness when he talks. He was the person that came to me and said, let me help you. You've been on public radio for such a long time. Let me help you, you know, write a book. Let me, you know, introduce you to the publishing company and get you to another level here in your world, because your story needs to be told. And so that's one of the things that I love. I love conscious conversations. It feeds my soul.
All right, stay with us, Lisa. Coming back with some phone calls and more chat on Coast to Coast AM.